This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
George Packer is a staff writer at the magazine and a great reporter about war and diplomacy. He goes places where most of us don't ever want to set foot: Iraq during the U.S. invasion, Sierra Leone, Afghanistan, and he helps us understand what's going on. He was recently in Tunisia, where the Arab Spring began 5 years ago. It was the only country involved that successfully became a democracy, or at least it seemed to. Tunisia today is one of the largest exporters of the jihadi fighters who are destabilizing the entire region and creating nightmares for so many people. George Packer sat down to talk with The New Yorker's Dorothy Wickenden.
George, we all think about Tunisia as the heart of the Arab Spring. What happened?
Yeah, it started there, and it spread from Tunisia to Egypt to Libya to Syria. All of those places are in various states of hellishness. Syria is the worst place on earth. Libya is in civil war and chaos with no functioning government. Egypt had a revolution, an election, and a coup, and now it's ruled by the military.
How many governments has it had since?
And so none of them come remotely close to qualifying as success stories. Tunisia does. It has had several rounds of elections. There's a margin of freedom for the press, for political parties, for civil society groups. It's a peaceful place. It doesn't have a large army. It doesn't have an oil economy, which can be a deadly thing when oil prices go down. So it's – in some ways, Tunisia has the ingredients for success, and yet it hasn't been very successful. And when I was there, I kept asking myself, why hasn't the freedom I see here brought about a good – vision of society? And the answer I came up with is Tunisians are now free to act on their unhappiness, and there's all kinds of unhappiness in Tunisia.
What's happened to the young, idealistic, democratic types who took part in the Arab Spring? Are they a noticeable force?
They're still there. They're a bit cynical, but I met a number who are still active. I met a young woman named Ons Ben Abdelkarim who runs an NGO. She's like 26. All the people I talked to were 26 years old there. Her group monitors parliament and tries to connect Tunisians to their legislature. It's a great group, and they were truly the young, inspiring idealists that I'd hoped to meet in Tunisia. But I also felt that they were in some ways, you know, sweeping the sands. I mean, there's such a huge generational problem of disillusionment and of joblessness. In January, there were big anti-unemployment demonstrations, including violence across the country, because there's just so much pressure that's built up. And I don't know that these very admirable youth groups are capable of handling a problem on that scale.
You had some really extraordinary conversations with young Tunisians who are disaffected. One of you talked about the project, as he called it, and he described it as leading to the Islamic State ruling the world. What did he and other emerging and former jihadis, and you talked to them too, what did they tell you about the lure of revolution?
Their attitude toward the Islamic State or al-Qaeda or going to fight jihad, for the most part, seemed just like a pure expression of rage, frustration. The word that kept coming up was suffocation. I'm suffocating here in Tunisia. That was a word I heard almost from all of them.
That's the question here. Is that true in Tunisia as it is in other countries throughout the region? Does he have no hope? It seems like a number of the young kids and their kids that you talk to actually are educated, and you would think they have prospects for their future.
They're educated, but that's it. Tunisia has this phenomenon of the educated jobless. In fact, you're more likely to be jobless if you have a college degree than if you don't, because there's still plenty of unskilled labor opportunities. But the old regime made sure a lot of Tunisians got college degrees, but it didn't create an economy that could produce jobs for them. So you have what to me is a dangerous situation for any regime. A whole generation of young people with high expectations, with educations, with some knowledge, and without any prospects of supporting themselves. And so that is a road to revolution and to jihad.
You know, the other thing that's extraordinary here is obviously they watch Western culture closely. One of them told you he's feeling the burn.
Yeah, this kid, I met him in the south of Tunisia. He's a high school student, plays baseball, wants to come study in America. His whole mental world is Americanized. He has this haircut that is more extravagant, you know, more hip than anything that I could conjure up from my Brooklyn life. But he also knows everything. He asked me, "Are you feeling the burn?" Because the last debate, I thought he really got Hillary's number. It's as if I'm talking to a kid in Brooklyn. He's in Djerba, Tunisia, and his classmates, some of them are going off to join ISIS.
What did he say about Trump?
Yeah, we didn't. He seemed more focused on Bernie than Trump. But what
that's interesting, though.
Yeah. But what was bizarre? I mean, he's kind of become a liberal American, late night comedy watching voter, a very recognizable type. Alongside him in his high school are these kids who are going off to Syria, and so there's some weird bifurcation in Tunisia, and it does see – it's a very divided society. I felt the whole time I was there that if this were the 60s and 70s, all these kids would have been joining Maoist organizations instead of going off to fight jihad. It seemed like the same dynamic of a divided society with a lot of class rage.
George, the jihadis seem to jump around the region from Tunisia. Why is that? What's going on there? And is this an ideological thing that is driving them?
Well, Tunisia is a country of only 11 million, is the largest producer of jihadis in the world by a lot. It's a real mystery. I think it's partly a sense of being neglected or marginalized by the state. There isn't much in the way of organized religion in Tunisia because of its history of rigid secularism. So young people are prey to the siren song of the jihadis. And most of them, when they join that movement, they can't really function as jihadis inside Tunisia. So they go to Syria. They go to Iraq to fight. More recently, they've been going to Libya in large numbers and then getting trained there by ISIS or al-Qaeda and coming back into Tunisia. I found it to be a relatively crude and non-ideological form of jihadism. It seemed more
so
like
they're kind of going where the jobs are.
They're going where the action is, but then they're coming back to Tunisia to kill foreigners, Tunisian police and soldiers. There've been a number of high-profile attacks, but these are all Tunisians who are leaving the country, being trained outside, mainly in Libya, and then coming back.
How is the current government handling the threat of terrorism?
Not very well, I'd say. Some officials denied that ISIS existed inside Tunisia. It's a foreign problem that's being imported. Not true. Tunisians are being exported and then re-imported as jihadis. They've taken what you could call just a kind of militarized and security-minded approach. Lots of arrests. In the first 6 months of last year, 100,000 Tunisians were arrested. It's a staggering number. Some of the old bad practices of a corrupt police force – torture and arbitrary harassment and detention are coming back. And they're struggling because honestly, they have not grappled with this problem. They have no program that I could find for prevention or rehabilitation of jihadis. And that's sort of basic stuff that the European countries are doing in order to find a way to either stop these young guys from leaving or once they come back to do something other than just throw them in prison. So Tunisia is really struggling, and I don't know that we have given them sufficient help. In fact, I know that we haven't.
Thank you so much, George. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dorothy.
The New Yorker's Dorothy Wickenden hosts our podcast, Politics and More. She spoke with staff writer George Packer.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.